From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Last week, Donald Trump achieved what's been called one of the biggest political upsets in American history when he defeated Hillary Clinton to become the 45th president of the United States. Today on Gulf Coast Live, we're talking with a diverse group of Florida voters, some of who supported Trump and some who did not, to share their aspirations and anxieties for the coming 4 years under President Donald Trump. First, this news. From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. It's been a week since our country elected Donald Trump to be the 45th president of the United States, a week that has seen protests in major cities across America, calls for the repeal of the Electoral College, and entire minority groups claiming they fear for themselves and for the country's future. On the other side of that, there are those who supported and voted for Trump who say these people are overreacting and simply unwilling to accept that their candidate lost. It's a continuation of the division that was a hallmark of this campaign season, one in which Trump promised a border wall along the Mexican border, with a further claim he'll deport millions of undocumented immigrants. He said he would dismantle Obamacare, but now says he'll retool it. He pledged to rework our trade and military alliances, and alarmed some by admiring Russian President Vladimir Putin. All the while, he was fending off charges of racism, misogyny, xenophobia, and sometimes exacerbated by supporters who would act out on those themes at his rallies. And now he won by the Electoral College. According to CNN, he did not win the popular vote and was short of Hillary Clinton by almost a million votes, according to the anger on one side and the continued divide, or that's adding rather to the anger and continued divide. So today on Gulf Coast Live, we brought together a diverse group of people on either side of this divide to talk about their hopes and fears for the next 4 years under President Trump. Our topic this hour, President-elect Donald Trump and our hopes and concerns for the coming 4 years. Call in with your thoughts. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Reach out on social media. Find us on Facebook, we're WGCU Public Media, or on Twitter at WGCU with the hashtag GCL. And a note for our guests and listeners about what today's show will focus on and what it won't. Our goal today is to look forward after the election and to the next 4 years of a Donald Trump presidency, the control of both chambers of Congress under Republican leadership, and the hopes and concerns for the time ahead. What the show will not focus on are the hypotheticals related to the presidential campaign and how the outcome may have been different. In the words of Hillary Clinton during her concession speech, quote, Donald Trump is going to be our president, and we owe him an open mind and the chance to lead, end quote. That said, as President-elect Donald Trump promises on the campaign trail, and how that information and what we can expect in the next 4 years is all part of our discussion today, and we remind listeners, callers, and our guests that we're here for a respectful, civil conversation. To start off, Trump's campaign for president became well known for rallies that ejected protesters, chants about locking up political opponents. They also criticized the mainstream media. The Washington Post reports school districts in Massachusetts, California, Colorado, and Minnesota sent letters home related to the division students were feeling during and after the election. This is something new in American politics. What do you tell students in those schools who may be learning about American politics from this election, and what does it say about how we do politics here in the United States? And I open that question up to anyone in our audience who might want to approach that issue, specifically regarding, you know, kids who maybe have been watching the political process and maybe paying attention perhaps for the first time. Carmen Salome?
I think It's a perfect opportunity for leadership, whether it's leadership at the educational level or just the country level, an opportunity for the current president and the president-elect to get together. Those visuals mean a lot when we see that those together on the screens and not all the strife that we see. I think that's more reassuring.
Carmen, while we've got the microphone in front of you, I wanted to ask just about your reaction to either Hillary Clinton's concession speech or Donald Trump's acceptance speech. Do you think that gives us any kind of indicators as to what to expect?
I think there was tones of unity in both speeches. They were both very good speeches. So that was very reassuring for me as an American.
Arlene Goldberg, since we're really close to you here as well, I wanted to get your thoughts on that same question regarding Trump's acceptance speech. I heard from a lot of folks who were pleasantly surprised by the very civil nature of the tone and, you know, talking about going forward as one nation together.
Well, I think as being our next president-elect, I think he had to do that. I had to try to pull everybody together. I still keep in my mind what he talked about during the primaries and how ugly it was for our country. So I don't know really what to believe. I don't know whether that's the Trump or that was the Trump.
And back to the issue of, you know, kids who are viewing this political process and sort of seeing the divide, specifically with your work with Visuality here in Fort Myers and, LGBT youth in the Southwest Florida communities. What do you say to them, or what kind of reactions have you gotten from the kids who come to Visuality?
Well, I've had an opportunity to speak to some of the high school students and the college students, and they were afraid. It's a scary thing to hear that things can be reversed, and not that they will, but that they could be reversed, and anything that we work for will, and with this kind of a environment, will not go any further unless you work within the states, and that if you live in a state that is liberal, and we here in Florida don't.
All right. Dr. Martha Beretta.
Thank you. Going forward, and just listening to Arlene, One Nation Together, two comments. One, that I wish both the president-elect, there have been acts of violence. There's been graffiti. There's been, you know, all kinds of little acts that are racist. And I really would call upon him, if he believes in pulling our nation together, to repudiate that and to say to the people who are doing that, that this is not the way that we build a nation. On the other hand, I wish that he would speak to those people who have felt so disenfranchised. I'm talking about working class and poor whites. I wish that he would speak to them, let him know, yes, I have heard you, but to hate the other groups is not the way. That is not the way that you will get ahead and have the American dream. So I think he has to let them know that I did hear you. The establishment did not hear you, but I did hear you. But hating the other groups are not your problem. I think it is up to President-elect Trump to let his people know that.
Yes, Leonardo Garcia, please.
You may continue with
the question. Oh, no, go ahead, please, please.
I know in the Latino community there's a lot of concern. I've talked to quite a few in Southwest Florida. But it is my personal hope that now that Donald Trump is the president-elect, that he really becomes the president for everyone. And we have to give him the opportunity for him to be the president, because the United States of America is the greatest nation in the world, and we need to keep it that way.
And for Leonardo and Dr. Beretta as well, I wanted to ask if, you know, maybe you see some parallels between, you know, groups who did support Trump and helped bring him to the presidency, who you know, talked about feeling marginalized and didn't feel like there was really any political party that was representing their positions. And do you see parallels between, you know, those groups of Trump supporters, as well as, you know, members of minority communities like Latino communities, you know, like African Americans, who have also felt that way?
One of the things that I think you asked the earlier question about, what do we tell our children?
Yes.
And we have not dealt with the very strict caste nor class system in this country. And many of Trump's supporters are those people who are white Americans and who are working class and poor white Americans who feel that others have had civil rights laws, the Voting Rights Act, and they have been left behind. They somehow have believed that, were taught to believe that white skin gave them privilege. Well, in the class system in America, that does not necessarily equate with the kind of economic privilege that they would like. And in terms of our children, I don't know if even our teachers understand what is happening, why this festering, these feelings didn't start yesterday. These feelings have been going on since white flight in the 70s. So we're dealing with feelings that have been just under the cover. Obama gets to be elected president. Everybody starts to react. And then Trump comes along and he gives people permission to be angry about their situations. And so I think as Americans, we need to start at all levels having a conversation about why his people are so angry.
Carmen Salome, yes.
President-elect Trump did better than Romney did with blacks and Hispanics. So that tells me that his message resonated with all Americans. The message of a secure country, jobs to the country, immigration laws that are enforced, and the group of people that felt forgotten by their elected officials. You know, the inner cities and these groups, Hispanics and blacks, who never felt listened to. So he did better than Romney did. That tells me his message had meat. It was issues, and they was issue based, and that's what brought out those folks in numbers.
All right. And Leonardo Garcia. Doris, please.
To go back to the children, I think what they're seeing on TV, because as soon as there's a protest, as soon as there's some kind of hate thing happen, the kids see all this. We as adults need to show the children that once a president-elect is elected, that we can unify the country, that it is not filled with hate. But these kids are, I think, getting a lot of bad messages from people that are still filled with hate on both sides or are filled with anger on both sides. And we have a responsibility to show the kids that in America, once a vote is taken, then that is the vote.
Carmen.
I also want to say about some of these protests and violence that we see on television. Much of it may be manufactured. It's very easy for someone to put on a Trump shirt because you're maybe getting a paycheck to go out and be a professional rabble rouser. So there's no proof that it's, Trump supporters per se. I find it hard to believe because I'm a Trump supporter. So I just find that hard to believe.
We should be fair and mention that, you know, we've seen media reports going both ways of attacks by, you know, Clinton fans on Trump supporters and vice versa. So I think it does show that there is kind of a divide there. Dr. Beretta.
Thank you for that comment. I think on both sides that responsible leaders, that I've said that Mr. Trump needs to go on and to talk about, you know, no violence. But I think either Mrs. Clinton or the president should do the same and say that we have to unite the country and let's let him have a chance to see what he will do. And let's hold him, you know, all of the communities, the Muslim community, Mexican community, African-American community, say to Mr. Trump, okay, we're going to give you this chance to show us that you can be a president for all of us. But I think both sides are going to have to call their people down a little bit.
All right. Arlene Goldberg with Visuality.
Yes. As everybody else has, I've seen the protests in the streets all over the country and even here in Fort Myers, which was really surprising to me because it's such a conservative area. People did step out and protest. I thought about it myself and I said, no, I have work to do. I think there's work to do to get where we need to get. And if we get out and protest it really doesn't do anything. We need to, like with the LGBT community, there's a lot of work to be done. We can still do that work, and we don't need to protest.
All right. Emma. I'm sorry, I should. Yeah, Emma Bansley, I apologize.
I believe recently we've seen that both Obama and Trump have spoken out against the protests and the violence. Trump himself said to stop it. However, I don't believe that's really enough, because the rhetoric that's been exchanged on the campaigns, especially coming from the Trump side, has been very incisive towards specific groups. And I think that just saying to stop it, just repudiating it, is too little too late at this point. People are already angry, and people are going to need time to calm down. People are going to need to see promising decisions by the politicians. And whenever they see decisions being made, such as selecting Steve Bannon for Trump's cabinet, they are not promising decisions. Those are decisions that continue to incite that hate, that discontent, that violence. They continue to incite the protest at the very least. And I think that the protest is healthy. People need to be able to speak up and protest before rights are lost, before decisions are made by the politicians in power to withdraw rights. That needs to be done so that the politicians know not to make those decisions.
Well, and Emma Bansley, as an LGBT advocate, I wanted to ask your opinion on Trump's campaign rhetoric on the campaign trail, talking about seriously considering appointing judges who might repeal the 2015 Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage nationwide. But then in his first post-election interview with 60 Minutes, he said, it's a done deal and he's fine with it. How does this go over with the LGBT community?
It doesn't, because once he appoints those judges, it's out of his hands. There are people that case shop for the cases, for the issues that they want to see brought up to the Supreme Court. Excuse me. So whenever the Supreme Court justice is put up, those decisions are out of Trump's hands. If a case then comes before to potentially overturn the marriage equality decision, then Trump doesn't really get a say on how that is decided, and he's not supposed to get a say. So it's out of his hands whether he is pro gay marriage or not.
And just on this broader topic of campaign talk versus what actually happens when somebody steps into that elected role, I would love to hear from Trump supporters in the room. Conversely, are Trump supporters concerned that maybe some of the campaign promises and things that they voted for him for may not happen now? Or is this really just more a case of, when you get new and better information, being open to changing your mind? Doris, with the Lee Republican Women Federated.
Thank you. I think in a real world, every campaign promise will not be met. I have faith that Trump will keep the important promises that he made. I think that he will move the country forward. I'm not concerned that he is going to promise one thing in the campaign and then not do it. I think he believes in what he has said, and I hope and I pray that he will continue with the campaign promises and do the things that need to be done to unify this country and to make it a better country. I had my home or my health insurance go up 130% this year. I sure would like to see something done about that.
Mm-hmm. Emma.
It's those campaign promises that he's made that worries some of us and we feel is going to pull the country back, not bring it forward. Progress will be lost.
Just to speak a little bit about something that you mentioned just a little while ago. This is Carmen. Those emotions of, you know, laws being reversed, I think is very common campaign rhetoric from the opposition. It's like abortion. It's the law of the land for years now. And for years, people talk about it's going to be reversed, and it has not happened. And the same is true, I believe, with gay marriage. Law of the land, it's not going to be reversed. So it's to evoke emotion and fear.
All right, let's hear from Arlene Goldberg with Visuality, and then we'll take a phone call.
Yes, I believe that Trump was so out there with the things that he said during his campaign, and the people that went along with him, I don't know how they could have, knowing the horrible things he said about so many different groups. And here we are, me, an LGBT person and a Hispanic people and whoever, it just made us feel like we were second-class citizens, and what he was going to do to us or not let us have or reverse things, it put terror into a lot of people.
All right. Matt, let's go to the phones now.
Yeah, John, we have Richard from Fort Myers who's on the line here to share his experience as a white Democrat. Richard, you're live on Gulf Coast Live.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to comment. I guess I've had a lot of conflictual thinking between Trump and Hillary Clinton, and Trump seemed to address some of my frustration with regards to how white people were being labeled as privileged. And it seemed to be an across-the-board kind of label, and they termed it white privilege. And there were a lot of people on NPR, a lot of hosts, a lot of, I would say, black hosts and guests that essentially would make statements like they didn't care about my heritage, and they didn't give a damn about my heritage, as a matter of fact, so how they referred it. And then you would get comments to the effect of regarding issues regarding some of the police shootings and how that affected public opinion. And there seemed to be no differentiation regarding some of the instances, such as Trayvon Martin and Michael Brown, how those appeared to be more of a self-defense situation. And then you would get the other ones, which were clearly, looked like to me, murders. But yet, the first two that I mentioned were the people and the white folks involved were called murderers. The police officer that was obviously defended himself and gave Michael Brown a lot of leeway in trying to place him under arrest, and then Trayvon Martin, who was 5'4" or 6'2", and then Zimmerman, who was like a 5'4" guy. I don't know if you've ever tried to take on a 6'2" person, but they have a lot more reach than you do. So I think that, you know, there was obviously some situation there that just didn't appear to be. But all this tended to form public opinion, and it affected my situation in the sense that all the frustration just seemed to be building, and we appeared to be getting played one against the other. I mean, there was, you know, like the comment in Wisconsin where the governor said, thought he was talking to Koch brother, and instant, and the Koch brother person was playing the, who was playing Koch brother. But so said that, asked Scott, I think it was, well, how do you plan to win the election? And he said, well, you divide and conquer. And I think there has been a division, but I think it's been division on both sides. I think there's been black folks who are trying to divide us, and I think there's been white folks that are trying to divide us. And if we don't come together and realize that we all have common interests, but when you start telling people that they have white privilege and that all the things that they've had, like myself, all the things that I have are a result of my white privilege and not on my individual effort.
I think we're getting off on a little bit of a tangent there, but I do think our caller makes some interesting points regarding racial tensions and perceptions and how that's been utilized and how that's played out a bit in this past election season. Yes, Carmen.
Said in the beginning, you know, he seemed to agree with Trump, and he had some frustrations. So to me, that tells me that, again, the language, the issues that Mr. Trump, platform spoke to everyone. It spoke to everyone. It didn't matter if you were black, white, Democrat, independent, Republican. There was something there to grab on to. And then a little bit about what he said towards the end there when he was talking about those shootings. That was not under Trump's watch.
Mohammed Al-Darsani with the Islamic Center for Peace here in Fort Myers.
Yes, thank you. Well, I would like to start by saying this. We all should realize that Trump is a reflection of what the nation is already, where the nation is, actually. It is an undercurrent that surfaced today. And his rhetoric during the campaign, it was strategic more than it was, you know, tactical. The man believes what he says, which is all right. I respect people who say what they believe. And he is also a reflection and manifestation of the frustration people have. Minorities or not, white, black, Muslims, Latinos, all of these segments of the societies, they have a huge percentage of them who felt they were marginalized, dismissed, and unfortunately, the media, through decades, not through few years, trumped just a phenomenon of the day. But there is something that's been going on for a while, and the media played a huge, huge role in dividing this nation. And when people went to the poll, unfortunately, we went with the tribal mentality. I am from the Democratic tribe or the Republican tribe. It doesn't matter who's right and who's wrong. I'm going to stick with my tribe. And this is wrong. We should have looked at the issue, look at what is good for the country, what is right, and vote for it. I didn't vote for Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary either. I voted for a third party that we all should support so we can have more options in this country. As long as we follow this corrupted system, the system is broke, and it gives only the elite. A lot of people are smarter than Trump, and they care about the same issues, but they wouldn't have the chance. Trump, because of his money, got there. Because of his expertise in the media, he exploited the media. He didn't use donations money, I believe, for any of his media appearances. The coverage was really sickening about Trump from all outlets, including NPR and including everybody. We gave him the chance, and a huge segment of the society did. So we should give him a chance also when he governs. I said a comment the other day also to another media outlet. We'll pray for Trump and help him when he's right, and we'll stand solid together. Because if the Muslims, the blacks, the Latinos, and the disprivileged white don't get together, nothing's going to change. The elite is going to stay in place. And really, Trump didn't win, but Hillary and her elite lost. And this is an opportunity to change the system, really. We need to utilize it. So from now on, we focus on the campaign finance, the electoral
college that brought him into office, while the other candidate got most of the votes. We all know that. And the rhetoric that he's really advanced through his campaign, we started seeing the result of it today. Right before I came here, I was sharing with some of the attendees here outside. I got a message from a social media group, just happened in New York. A Muslim girl at the bus stop, the college bus stop, was attacked. Her hijab was removed, and she was stabbed in the arm and in the neck, wounded in the arm and in the neck, by somebody who feels now we have the right to attack the others, no matter who the other is. We see it today for, you know, against the Muslims, but very soon, and we've seen it against the black, and we're going to see it against the Latinos, we're going to see it against the gays and lesbians, we're going to see it against probably white Democrats who decided to vote for Trump or against Trump. It's going to happen. We're going to have a chaos if we don't get together. Trump is not going to promote the chaos. He's too smart to do that. But we, the people, if we don't stand and show them we're going to work with you when you're right, but we're going to stop you by all means when you're not, nothing's going to change. And if we don't work on changing the system itself, we're going to end up in the same place. About the promises for the campaigns, I agree with all of you. Obama broke all his promises. George Bush before him broke all the promises. And Bill Clinton and Hillary broke their promises. And this is the nature, unfortunately, of the politics of this country. So we need to stand against that. Thank you.
Our topic this hour of Gulf Coast Live is President-elect Donald Trump and our hopes and concerns for the coming 4 years of his presidency. I invite listeners to call in with your comments and questions. 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Reach out on social media. You can find us on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media, where we're live streaming today's show as well. You can also tweet us. We're at WGCU. Use the hashtag GCL. And let's hear from Arlene Goldberg with Visuality, and then we'll take a call from a listener.
I think with the rhetoric that Trump put out there, it brought people out. The people that had some hate in their hearts picked up a lot of the things he was saying, and they're making it happen because now they have approval to do that. I think they felt that okay, I can do this now. Trump is saying these things, so now I can do it. So that's why I think we're having a lot of these physical attacks. And the other thing is Mr. Trump's President-elect Trump's rating for HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, on all his businesses are zeros. So when he says that he's there for the LGBT community, he's not.
So you're approaching this with some skepticism. I'd like to look specifically at the Latino population. Because Trump took about 30% of the Latino vote nationally, and particularly for Leonardo Garcia and for Carmen Salome, I wanted to get your perspective on how Trump did as well as he did with Latino voters, and perhaps if there's a difference between Latino voters here in Florida, where Trump took 31% of the vote, and Latino voters in Arizona, where Trump took about 10%.
Well, I can tell you that as there are many registered Democrats in the Latino community, there's some, too, in the Republican Party.
Sure.
And I know Trump was very smart towards the end by trying to include the Latino community, and I think that's why he was able to get some of the votes from the Latino community. Not as high percentage as probably he would hope to, but I like to say that let me just add this comment not related to that.
Sure.
I'm from the Dominican Republic, and I co-own a language school in Santiago, Dominican Republic, then New York Central Language School. And I wanted just to bring this perspective to this discussion, because in the Dominican Republic, the great majority of the people wanted Hillary to win because of what they heard about Trump talking in the campaign trail. But today, everybody is looking forward to him being the president and see how he can lead the United States into what has been a symbol of the United States of America, a country that is the number one country in the world. So we can continue to be the number one nation in the world. So, and regarding back again to the why 30% of the Latino voted for Trump.
Nationally.
Mm-hmm. I think he was smarter towards the end by trying to include the Latino community. So he was able to persuade some voters there.
I think it gets dangerous when we say the Hispanic community and we lump everybody in with that one title and think that everybody thinks the same and is going to vote the same. So for Mr. Trump, I believe there, again, I keep coming back, it was the issues. So he was able to talk about bringing jobs back to the United States, getting into the inner cities and making those neighborhoods safe and vibrant. That's what I believe spoke to American citizens, whether you were Hispanic or not. And that's what was important for me.
Carmen, I think you make an interesting point there, and it's something that I've been corrected on before in the past, too, with the idea that the Latino community is some sort of homogenous political voting bloc, when in reality it's just as diverse as any other demographic group in terms of politics. Dr. Beretta, with the Blanchard House Museum of African American History and Culture in Charlotte County.
African Americans have not been faring as a group very well in the last probably 12 years or whatever. And I think a lot of African Americans, if you look at the policies of Bill Clinton and, you know, three strikes you're out, a lot of African American men are in prison because of those policies. The welfare reform that really broke families apart. So I could see when Donald Trump says, let me do something about the inner cities, when the schools are failing, when people are hungry, when husbands and boyfriends are in prisons, then I could see why many stayed home or did not vote. Mm. I voted for Ms. Stein, a third party person, because she spoke to what I believed morally, what I believed she could do. As an African American, I think, myself personally, I always take a wait and see attitude. Because we never know what's going to happen, what the president is really going to do. And back in 1980, Mr. Trump was not the very first person. In fact, I looked this up myself last night, was not the very first person to say, make America great again. It happened to be Ronald Reagan. And Ronald Reagan used the code of the welfare queen. So as African Americans, we have to wait and see what he will do, just as we've had to wait and see what every president will do for African Americans.
All right. Well, let's go to the phones now. Matt, tell us who we have.
Yeah, we've got a full bank of calls here, John, and we'll try our best to get to as many as we can. But as our listeners can understand, we have a lot of great conversation going on here in our studio. We're first going to go to Ralph in Port Charlotte. Ralph has a comment about comments made during the campaign that come to Hispanics and Latinos being deported. Ralph, are you with us?
Hello?
Ralph, you're live on Gulf Coast Live. Welcome to the show. What would you like to share with us?
Well, you know, I'm thinking I've been in this country since 1974. I grew up in New York City. I came from Costa Rica. And I came legal, and I became a citizen of the United States. But I deal with a lot of Latinos, especially the so-called Mexicans. They can be from Guatemala, they can be from Honduras, but over here we call them Mexicans. And these people go to the orchards, the orange orchards, the sweet potato fields, the strawberry fields, and they work so hard. And they have an illegal social security number. They pay taxes because they come to buy cars from us. And I'm a car salesman. And they buy cars. And they have a house, and they are afraid of getting deported. But my thought is, if these people are honest and they pay their taxes, and they somehow got away with a fake social security, let's put them on trial. Let's put them on probation. 5 years, here's your social security work permit. Here's your temporary green card. if you don't commit crimes and you're paying your taxes, we're going to give you an extra 10 years. After 10 years, you have a chance to become a citizen. Because there's nobody, the so-called middle class or white class, whatever you want to call them, that are going to those fields to pick up the oranges. Those fields will die. These people are hardworking people, and 90% of them are illegal. And, you know, we have to give them a chance. I've seen them work. I've seen them buy cars. I've seen them buy houses. I've seen how they work all together. A busload, 42 people going to the orchard field from 5 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock at night to pick up the oranges that we drink orange juice from. So we have to give them a chance. That's my opinion.
All right. Well, thanks for that argument in favor of the case for a pathway to legal citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Matt, let's take another call from the phones.
Sure. We have Chris from Estero. Chris was calling in with a request about information and statistics on how people voted. Chris, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Please go ahead and share with us your thoughts or comments on our show today.
Good afternoon. I think this my comment ties into Carmen's last comments. And I'm not really sure how we're able to analyze who voted for Trump and who didn't vote for Trump. If you look at the exit polls and the predictions that were made by all the pundits, Trump was going to lose and he was going to lose big. So if we're relying on exit polls to say Hispanics voted for Clinton and not for Trump, or blacks voted for Clinton and not for Trump, how do we know that's accurate? And how does that substantiate this conversation?
That's a very interesting point. It reminds me of an article the Naples Daily News' Brett Batten put out just the day before the election, saying regardless of who wins, the experts are the losers. So that's a really good point, you know, questioning where the information that we have is coming from. Carmen Salome with Republican Women of Cape Coral.
2 days after the election, the article I read had poll numbers from CNN and NBC, which showed that Trump did 30% better than Romney did with those segmented groups. So that's where I was coming from.
All right. Thanks for clarifying that for us. Matt, do we have any more calls on the phone? Nope. Okay. Alex Pilkington, thank you for I wanted to apologize. You've been sitting there silently, and I wanted to make sure we brought you into the conversation. Please.
Alex Pilkington, College Republicans, self-identifying gay man. I want to go to the first call that we heard about immigration. And as a Trump supporter, I found that his immigration policies were kind of unproductive, if you could say. I'm studying economics right now, and I believe that the best way for this country to thrive is with our immigrants. Because when immigrants come into our country, they don't take the jobs that we as normal Americans take. They take either the really low jobs or the really high jobs, and it helps stimulate our economy. So I believe that if we have a easier path to citizenship for immigrants, it'll boost our economy.
Carmen, please.
Just to clarify that President-elect Trump was talking about people that come into the country illegally. Legally coming into the country, immigrants, certainly, we welcome them, and certainly they work very hard for us. But I just wanted to clarify that he was talking about illegal, and he was also talking about enforcing the laws that are on the books now. The current administration chose not to do that. So that is, you know, what resonated, again, with the American people. We have laws on the books. Let's enforce them, because then there is a clear path to come to the country.
And Arlene Goldberg with Visuality, looked like you wanted to say something there.
Yeah, I did. Some of those people working in the fields are illegals. So those are the people that he was talking about, because they are the illegals. They're not everybody came here legally that are working in those fields. And they're frightened.
And Doris, please. And remind everybody as well that Doris is with Lee Republican Women Federated.
I think one of the things that we're leaving out when Trump is talking about illegal immigrants, and he has been emphasizing it even much more since he has been elected, he is talking about we need to get rid of the criminal element. of illegal immigrants so that they don't continue to commit crimes here. They aren't protected. And there are a lot of illegal immigrants who are hardworking people, but there are also some who are criminals and gang members, and they need to be sent back to the country they came from.
Arlene.
But what does he mean? Before he said it would be whoever was illegal, he said nothing about the criminals until recently. So what does he mean? We don't know what he means. Is it that way or is it this way?
Leonardo Garcia.
Yeah. I only hope that the program for the students, the DACA program, will remain in place because it provides good opportunity for those students who are waiting to be legalized, and many of them already have jobs and being productive because of the DACA program. I hope that Trump will keep the program.
All right. And Emma, you're going to have our final comment today as we wrap things up.
Okay. I just wanted to touch on the comment about Trump only deporting criminal illegal immigrants. That is the current policy of the Obama administration. They do not deport people as a standard that are not found to be criminals. The only thing that might change under Trump is that he might change the standards for that, what is required to be considered a criminal.
Only enforces the law. The president does not write law.
All right. We have just a little bit more time here, but Imam al-Darsani. Okay,
yes, sir. About the last comment from Emma, the reality is Obama deported illegal immigrants and legal immigrants more than anybody in the history of the United States. And that assumption that Trump is going to continue that, that scares a lot of immigrants, even legal ones, because they are, and there were cases when they went back to the applications of the immigrants when they just arrived in the country. And if there is one single discrepancy, you're out. So everybody should be aware of this.
All right, and we are unfortunately going to have to leave it there. But thanks so much to everybody who joined us in studio for today's lively conversation, for everybody who called in and took part. And please help us continue the conversation online as well. We're on Twitter at WGCU. Just use the hashtag GCL. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.